Across America, it's The Weekend with Joe Pags. To talk to Joe, call 800-501-7080. And now, The Weekend. Here's Joe Pags.
All right, great radio stations across the land. JoePags.com, all the social media there, plus the live video feed. It's The Weekend with Joe Pags. I'm really glad to have you along for the ride. There's a lot going on, a lot that we want to get into. It's interesting, in my Monday through Friday show, the Joe Pags show, I always make sure that I start out with something other than the politics of the day. I think that on the weekend, those of you listening, and I appreciate all of you, you expect me to be into the politics of the day. And unfortunately, because there is there's just 3 hours on the weekend. I mean, during the week, obviously, I've got 15 hours. But on the weekend, you've got 3 hours, and it would be hard to not jump, both feet in. But trust me, I do like to have fun, too, and talk about fun things. It's just we're in a situation where it's really hard to do. I've got a lot of really good interviews coming your way today. I've got David Limbaugh, yes, Rush's brother. He's got a new book out about what the left is trying to do. Mark Lotter from the campaign. Dr. Jerome Corsi, who was interrogated by Mueller. His thoughts on the impeachment fiasco. We've got that, as well as Tracy Beans, a great reporter from Washington, D.C., and much more. Also, retired Navy SEAL Clint Emerson, who's got a great book out that you're going to love as well. So we are going to have to jump both feet in. But before we do that, something odd happened. I checked out Twitter this morning. Very strange. Former President Barack Obama is actually going after Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders and the like. I found this to be very, very interesting because it's not expected. The reason why we have this leftist movement in this country is because of Barack Obama and his 8 years. It made it somehow normal to act like that. It made it somehow acceptable to say, I don't like how we got here. I'm anti-colonial. I don't think the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence goes far enough to take care of redistribution. I mean, Obama said these things. He's a guy who was molded from radicals. And when he ran the country for 8 years, he ran it that way. I've got a pen, I've got a cell phone, I will circumvent Congress if I have to, which he did with DACA, which he did with immigration. So now he comes out, and what he had to say, according to the Washington Post, is, whoa. The headline, which is, again, stunning if you haven't seen it, Obama goes on rampage against Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders. This is from Carmine Sabia. We are connected on Twitter. The name of the website is Explain Life, Uncensored Truth. Former President Barack Obama has gotten into the 2020 presidential election, but not in the way Democrats wanted him to. The former president stepped in to warn Democrats that their extremist ideas are not going to work for the average American, and how they could be the end of the Democrat Party. This is according to the Washington Post, a far left-wing outlet, by the way. Former President Barack Obama Friday urged Democrats running for the White House to not lurch too far to the left in their pursuit of the nomination, while at the same time seeking to quell concerns in the party about its 2020 hopefuls in the messy primary season to come. The comments made in Washington in a meeting of the Democracy Alliance, a powerful network of liberal donors, mark some of Obama's most pointed words yet about a fluid primary in which he's not picking sides. They echoed previous comments in which he warned about the dangers of pursuing purity and rigidity in their politics. Quote, "This is still a country that is less revolutionary than it's interested in improvement," the former president said as he took thinly veiled shots at New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Democrat presidential candidates Senator Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Quote, "They like seeing things improved, but the average American doesn't think that we have to completely tear down the system and remake it. And I think it's important for us not to lose sight of that," he said. The speech by the former president could be seen by some as an endorsement of his former vice president and Democrat presidential candidate Joe Biden. But it's tough to imagine that his next comment was anything other than a direct hit on Representative Ocasio-Cortez and Representatives Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, collectively named the squad. Quote, "My point is that even as we push the envelope and we are bold in our vision, We also have to be rooted in reality and the fact that voters, including Democratic voters and certainly persuadable independents or even moderate Republicans, are not driven by the same views that are reflected in certain, you know, left-leaning Twitter feeds or the activist wing of our party, the former president said. The former president urged Democrats to not be frightened of the contentious primary, even as Deval Patrick and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg are set to enter the campaign. For those who get stressed about robust primaries, I just have to remind you that I had a very robust primary, former President Obama said. He talked about his primary battle with Hillary Clinton in 2008, who was considered the favorite to win the Democratic nomination. Clinton, who's a former First Lady and former Senator of New York, went on to join the administration as President Obama's Secretary of State. We have a field of very accomplished, very serious and passionate and smart people who have a history of public service, he said. And whoever emerges from the primary process, I will work my tail off to make sure they are the next president. He gave Democrats a message of hope and change, the platform that worked for him on his road to becoming president of the United States in 2008. Quote, we have the better argument, he said. We can't be arrogant about it. We can't take for granted that somehow people just, you know, the scales will fall from their eyes at some point. What is their better argument? Are you exhausted with the booming economy? Annoyed? This is Carmine saying this. Annoyed with how your 401k is growing? Do you despise not being engaged in wars in foreign lands? If you are, then the Democrat Party is for you. Doesn't appear to be anybody from the Democratic field that has a chance to defeat President Donald Trump, and former President Obama's speech sounds like he is keenly aware of it, making a desperate plea to Democrats to stop acting like Democrats. Interesting that Obama comes out and does this. So from Obama's perspective, what is his problem? From his perspective, what exactly is causing him to step up and say these things? Well, he sees that there's really no chance for Democrats to beat a guy who has a churning economy that is actually, he's actually done a 180 from the Obama rules, regulations, and policies, and it's been very successful. He sees no chance for his legacy to be saved as this president dismantles it one issue by one issue, one regulation by one regulation. The change is real. And if he's really going to lean back on hope and change, hope what? You hope that the economy stops? You hope that people don't go back to work? You hope that people stay on entitlements? What is the change? Change from a GDP way better than yours? Change from black and Hispanic and female unemployment being the lowest we've ever seen? Change from too many Americans working? I mean, not really clear, I understand. But he's afraid. He's got an 8-year legacy that he thought he would put in place that would last forever in this country. Not going to last forever. They must be undone to get us back on track as the most prosperous, greatest nation on planet Earth. What he did set us back a long way. And I actually think that the radical wing of the party did get their gumption and their ability, their fortitude from what he pulled for 8 years. But I've mentioned this a million times. He looks good, he sounds good, reads a teleprompter well, and can make you think he's on your side, even if he isn't. Ocasio-Cortez can't. She's fingernails on a chalkboard. Rashida Tlaib is being investigated. She's the whack job. Ilhan Omar is a rabid anti-Semite. These things are true. So Obama's been pretty quiet. He's been sort of on the sidelines. Now he's coming out because what he sees is people not only not dropping out, he sees more people jumping in because they think they have a chance, seeing as how horrible the field on the left is. That's really what's going on. He's freaking out. Carmine does a great job in outlining this. I mean, he really did go directly at Ocasio-Cortez. He really did really go after Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. They've gone so far left that even the left would lean to the right and would go, well, I'm going to keep the guy in there that's keeping the economy looking well, looking good. The Dow went over 28,000 yesterday. And I don't watch the Dow every day. I don't care. I've got a 401k that does just fine. I'm not playing the stock market like some of you might be. But the Dow going over 28,000 is a big deal. GDP being where it is a big deal. Consumer confidence is a big deal. Unemployment and those numbers continuing to look the best we've ever seen. It's a big deal. Adding over 6 million jobs, approaching 7 million jobs in less than 3 years. Over 500,000 of those are manufacturing jobs Obama said would never come back. So what's the argument? He has the right to freak out. His legacy's done. It turns out he did exactly what he said he was going to do, but he did it with a smile, and he did it with a rock star sort of aura. So people ignored it and just let it happen. Now we're seeing what real policies will do. And whether you like the guy in the White House or not, you don't have to like him personally. The moves that he's made have been beneficial to all Americans who work, to all Americans who want to do better. So your thoughts on that? Obama finally coming out, breaking his silence, and not to back anybody up, but to basically say the field is doing it wrong right now, and those who are leading the party are doing it wrong right now. 1-800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. JoePags.com. Stay here. Great to have you the weekend with Joe Pags. You know, I was wondering when Obama would come out. The reason I thought he wasn't coming out was because he couldn't support Joe Biden. And you're wondering, well, why couldn't he support Joe Biden? Well, initially, it felt like he couldn't support Joe Biden because allegations of racism were coming out, allegations of sexism were coming out, where he's always sniffing people's hair and hugging them and rubbing their noses. Also, did Obama want to tie his legacy to a guy who clearly has lost a step? Joe Biden is not the Joe Biden of 8 years ago. Joe Biden, mentally, there's something going on there, I believe. I'm not a doctor, but that's what I believe. He loses his place. He stops speaking in the middle of a sentence. He gets flustered very easily. He's just not the same guy. And Joe Biden's always screwed up. Like when he told the guy in the wheelchair, stand up, Chuck. Oh, what am I saying? God bless you. Everybody stand up for Chuck. Or when he said, you know, you don't need assault rifles. Just get a shotgun and shoot it out the window if somebody comes to your house. What? So Joe Biden's always screwed up. Joe being Joe, right? We just have to accept it because he's on the left. So if he screws up on the left, he's not a racist or anything like that. He's just, that's Joe being Joe. But now there's something very different about Joe Biden. And I understand Obama not wanting to tie his legacy to this guy, even though he chose the guy to be his vice president for 8 years. Like, I'll give you an example. Kamala Harris has gone after Joe Biden historically now, or fervently now, basically calling him a racist. Biden's answer that would shut that down is very simple. The first black president in modern history chose me to be his vice president for 8 years. Tell me again how I'm a racist? And then that shuts it down. But he hasn't been smart enough to even go there. I think he alluded to it once. But that's the answer every time somebody says you're a racist. Well, then why did he bring me along? Just wanted his token racist in the White House with him? I don't get it. But again, Biden, with all these allegations, all of this baggage, I see why Obama would stay away. But why wouldn't Obama choose somebody else? Why not back somebody else? Well, he basically tells us why. The party is too far left. See, Obama got it done through trickery. And let me explain what I mean by that. Obama was elected because he was cool. And again, wore a suit well. Has a great smile. Would change his tone and cadence depending on which audience he was in front of. In front of an audience he thought was more mainstream or maybe more white. He would speak as eloquently as he can speak. In front of an audience that would be predominantly black, he'd say instead of country, he'd say country. We're going to get out there and get it done. Hope and change. I mean, he would change the way he speaks, depending on the audience. In front of a Hispanic audience, he said, Happy Cinco de Cuatro, which of course means five to the four. He meant Cinco de Mayo. But he would try to throw in a Spanish word here and there in front of an audience he thought would be predominantly Hispanic, because that somehow endeared him to the audience, and it worked. And I don't know if these women were higher, if they really were, but people would faint when Obama would speak. So he did all that while at the same time being a far left-wing Alinsky leftist progressive. We have to dismantle colonialism. We have to dismantle white privilege, as he would see it. We have to always back up the person of color, POC, in any situation, whether they were right or wrong. Michael Brown was wrong. Attacked a police officer. Obama sent three representatives from the White House to Michael Brown's funeral, even though the police officer was defending his own life and the community after having been attacked by the 300-pound guy. Trayvon Martin, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. Trayvon Martin circled back and attacked George Zimmerman. That was proven in court, not by me. And by the way, Michael Brown causing his own death was proven by Eric Holder's DOJ, not by me. Trayvon Martin went back. George Zimmerman thought he was going to die, shot and killed him. He was exonerated because what he did was self-defense. Obama took Martin's side. Obama took Michael Brown's side. Obama took Skip Gates' side in Cambridge when the guy was seen breaking into a house. Turned out it was his own house. But who knows that? The police show up to find out, what the hell's going on? Who are you? Prove that you live here. You can't just break into a window. Obama said, I don't know the details, but clearly police acted stupidly. Obama is a radical as AOC. But he's smarter in how he does it. And he's more palatable in how he does it. And now he's watching his legacy crumble because the people that are doing exactly what he set them up to do are not doing it the way he did it, and they're going to ruin it. It's like Jonathan Gruber, the guy who basically was the main driving force behind Obamacare. People like me, people like you, many of you, knew that Obamacare was a ruse. It was a takeover of 1/6 of the economy. It was about central government having power and control over your health needs and your health services. Obama claimed you'd save $2,500 a year. In fact, it costs about $5,000 more a year. Like your doctor, keep your doctor. That was a lie. Like your plan, keep your plan. Another lie. And when Gruber, who is not as cool and as smooth as Obama, was talking about this in front of people, he said, well, you have to just say what you have to say, you know, because of the stupid American voter. Obama knew that he was able to persuade them through his star power, and then he could make any progressive move he wanted, no matter how bad. Obamacare is a boondoggle that does not make anything affordable, and it actually takes from the healthy and gives to those who just didn't have coverage. And it punished the middle class exponentially more than anybody else through the fines and taxation if you didn't choose to get health care. But he was able to sell it because he's cool and does the brackets for the NCAA and can shoot the basketball and can hang out with Hollywood stars and tell a good joke. Those who are the power structure on the left today, the Democrat Party, do not reflect what Obama set up for them. And it's got him really angry because he knows that they're going to lose badly next year unless they change course and start doing it the way he did it. I just don't think they have the ability. He's a talented guy in lying about who he is and what he really wanted. You say hope and change while not saying what policies you really want to put in place. 1-800-501-7080, JoePags.com. Stay here.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.
Great radio stations across the land, JoePags.com. All the social media there, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email. I'm on that Parler or Parlay app as well. Just look up Joe Pags. You can also sign up for the newsletter right there at the website. Scroll down to JoePags.com, JoePags.com. Scroll down, and you'll see where to put your email address in. Plus, the live video feed is there, too. The way the live video feed works is after the show is over, it replays over and over. So you missed any part of the show, you can go and watch it again there or listen to it, of course, on one of these great radio stations. A lot of people want to be heard on Obama coming out and not supporting a candidate. He's actually coming out and talking about why he's not supporting a candidate and what he sees as the bad moves by those on the left. And keep in mind, he was not any more mainstream than Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or AOC. He just did it in a very cool sort of Hollywood star way. And you know how we get in this country. with fandom, I mean, with fanaticism. You fall in love with the person no matter what they're saying or doing. And that's why when some big star does something really horrible, people are still like, I support OJ. You know what I mean? Let me go to the phone line, see what you think about all this. Going to be line one. Mike is in Florida. Mike, what's going on?
Hey, Joe, God bless you. I appreciate your, you know, insight on everything. I was going to say to you and to America that you were, you know, talking about Obama. Yeah, he's mad at AOC, and he's mad at Bernie Sanders because they're tipping their pitches. Like you said, he was a master at deception. He told everybody as he smiled and, you know, he made everybody feel comfortable with him and all that stuff. He didn't come out and say what he was going to do. He just made everybody feel relaxed and that he was going to take care of them. Remember that one gal after coming from a Obama rally one time, you know, she said she don't have to worry about her car or insurance or paying, you know, she thought everything was going to be, you know,
right.
She was mesmerized by the guy, you know, she thought everything was going to be, you know, she didn't have to worry about anything. So
no, I think you make a perfect point. What Obama did when he was running for
what they're going to do about raising their taxes and getting rid of this, getting rid of airplanes and getting rid of this, you know, they're tipping their pitches, and Obama's not mad at them for their policy, but he's mad at them how they're going about it.
Mike, sounds good. I appreciate that. I don't think you can hear me, so I'm going to let you go. You can listen on the radio. You're right. You're absolutely right. Obama didn't say anything when he was running for election in 2008. What Obama said basically was, John McCain is George W. Bush. George W. Bush is the greater evil. George W. Bush is the reason why everything is horrible in his country, and everything wasn't horrible in the country. George W. Bush, John McCain, same guy. By the way, I'm going to bring you some hope and change. Oh, yes, we can. And people didn't say hope for what and change what? What are you hoping and changing? When he would say, si se puede, which is, yes, we can, in Spanish. What did he mean? We can what? Yes, we can what? People were, yes, we can. Yes, we can. They were just screaming it. Hope and change. Woo! But they didn't know what it meant. It just meant that he was saying it. It's like some Hollywood star. Pick your favorite A-list star. If that person walked in to give a seminar and you happened to be there and they started chanting something stupid, you probably would start chanting with him or her because you really love that person for some reason. Obama was well-groomed and well-coached. He did a very good job in playing the role. They're not doing a very good job. AOC is an actress. She answered a cattle call for that congressional seat, and because of the backing of the far left, she won the seat with zero experience, zero ability, and zero knowledge to get the job done. But she was an actress, just not as good an actress as Obama is an actor. Rashida Tlaib is not a good actress at all. We know exactly who she is. Ilhan Omar, not a good actress at all. We know exactly who she is. And I'll throw Ayanna Pressley in there as well from Massachusetts as she rounds out the squat. I mean, I hear Obama saying, come on, man, play the game better than this. And when Mike said tipping his pitches or tipping their pitches, that's a baseball reference. If the pitcher does something every time he's going to throw a fastball, he's tipping off to the batter, I'm about to throw a fastball. That's what these people are doing. I want trillions of dollars for Medicare for all. I want trillions of dollars for free college. I want trillions of dollars for the Green New Deal. I want trillions of dollars to get rid of fossil fuels and do something else. They're actually saying it. And Obama's like, dude, stop saying it. Once you get the job, you can do it. Let me go back to the phone lines. I appreciate you waiting. Danny is in Florida. Danny, what's going on? Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, Joe. I appreciate you.
You bet.
I appreciate the show. You do
Thank
great
you.
Work, and I'm not blowing smoke when I say it.
Thank you.
I have a different perspective on this. I don't see the Obama administration was a mess. Benghazi, the Fast and the Furious. What did he do the last 5 minutes he was in office? Pardon cop killers, terrorists, traitors. Kind of a the legacies can when you close the book.
Well we can bring up Bergdahl. We can bring up a lot of things. You're absolutely right. Well, there were many scandals.
Was it? What do you
it was horrible. He gave five terrorists back, to get one Bergdahl, and Bergdahl was the bad guy to begin with. So you're right about that. When I say the legacy that he built is when you ask people, especially millennials in this country who were 10 years old when he got elected, they will tell you he was the best president we ever had. And you ask them why, they won't talk policy. You know that. They'll talk about how cool he is.
What'd you think all of those parasites at Guantanamo Bay did when he freed them, he and Bush? Went right back to the battlefield to kill off.
They went right back and started killing Americans again. Exactly right.
Right. And so did the five that were traded for Bergdorf.
Of course. They were high-level terrorists that we knew killed people. Yes.
Yeah. And can you imagine if Trump did that? He'd be a candidate for the electric chair. And let's talk about Biden a minute while I got you, then I'll let you go. Biden never, they talk about his fastball. He's an idiot. That guy sucks. There's something wrong with him mentally, and there always has been. His claim to fame in the White House when he was under Obama's wing, that broken wing that Obama had. He walked around the White House. He was giving tour guides. Totally useless. He's going to be the president? You want any of these jackals, these psychotic jackals?
I don't think Biden ever had a really good fastball, but if he ever had an 80-mile-an-hour fastball, it's about 60 now or 50.
Couldn't have played for the Mets in 63.
That's bad. If you can't play, I could have played for the Mets in 63. That's how bad they were.
Yeah, we're cut from the same cloth. Does anybody, any of your audience, any of you, I plead with you, do any of you out there educated, because you're listening to Joe Pags, you must be educated. That's my assumption, and it's a good one. Does anybody really want any of these psychotic jackals to run this country? Pelosi looks like she's ready to have a nervous breakdown. She's going to fall off the edge any minute. Schumer's the biggest phony on earth. Schiff, that guy belongs in another country.
Yeah.
All of them. Bernie?
No, they're all not. But you have to understand, as you say that, realize over 60 million people voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016. I mean, I'm going to leave you with that. I appreciate the phone call. All very well said. But keep in mind, that's really what happened in 2016. We almost got a president, Hillary Clinton, who is actually to the left of Barack Obama. And is a globalist, and is an authoritarian, is a totalitarian, and is somebody who thinks she was owed or was entitled to the job of president of the United States. She really thought she was entitled to it. And thank God she was a horrible candidate, and Trump was able to take advantage of that. But think about it. Over 60 million people voted for her. She got more popular votes, thanks to California, than President Trump did. I mean, let that sink in, because as common sense filled as you are, and as smart as you are, and as right as you are in what you were saying, that many millions of people are waiting to vote for the next Democrat, because there is a groupthink indoctrinated mentality out there that says that they have to. Let me go to line four. It's going to be Joe in Ohio. Joe, what's going on?
Joe, I'm going to make a comment, then I'll let you talk. I think... actually, that Obama, when you said he was scared, is because all the evidence that's coming out during the investigation is pointing to him and Hillary Clinton.
I don't know. I got to be honest with you. Thanks, man. I appreciate you. I don't think that's the issue because, I mean, maybe he is scared of that. I'm not saying that he's not. But in the speech that I'm talking about, he was going after the left wing of his party. He was going after the socialists and the progressives. He was basically giving a dog whistle saying, you got to do it like I did it. You can feel that way because I do. And if you listen to sort of the way he worded it, he's saying the middle America patriots that love the country have to be tricked into buying what you're saying. They're not going to get what you're saying. I mean, the quote that he says... they like seeing things improved. These are his words. They like seeing things improved, but the average American doesn't think that we have to completely tear down the system and remake it. And I think it's important for us not to lose sight of that. He doesn't say we shouldn't tear down the system and remake it. He says the average American doesn't think we have to. So in essence, wink, wink, nod, nod, we're going to do it. Just don't tell them we're doing it. Same thing with Obamacare. Let's lie about it. He lied about the money savings. He lied about keep your plan. He lied about those things. He lied that it wasn't going to be a tax if you didn't buy health insurance. That was a lie. He lied that it would help middle class people when in fact it raised their rates more than anybody else. Now, he's not dumb. He knew he was lying. But he also knew that he wanted to take over in central government the entire healthcare system. And he achieved that. So his end goal was, I need to achieve this. How do I get there? The way he got there was actually pretty simple. Lie. Put Jonathan Gruber on it. Let him lie. Let Biden lie. So it's like Benghazi. Oh, crap. Our policies led to this. We didn't protect Christopher Stevens and the other three Americans. They're all dead. Let's lie. Let's find a YouTube video that fits the narrative that's hateful toward Muslims. Let's put that out there as if people in the streets of Benghazi, Libya, actually are watching YouTube. And let's pretend on the anniversary of 9/11 that they just decided, that's it, let's just go kill some Americans. That isn't what happened. But they lied about it being a video over and over and over again. And trust me when I say some left-wing Americans that still love Obama still believe that lie. Just like they believe the lie of Fast and Furious, which was a gun-smuggling operation by the DOJ under Obama, where they didn't even tell Mexico they were doing it. There are people on the left in this country who still believe that it was a continued operation started by George W. Bush. That's untrue. But if you lie enough, and if you're likable enough, people want to have a beer with you. Let's have a beer. If you're that guy, then people will accept it. A lot of them will. So make sure that you hear what he's saying. Americans like seeing things improved, but the average American doesn't think we have to completely tear down the system to remake it. And I think it's important for us not to lose sight of that. He's not saying don't do it. He's saying don't say it. 888-941-PAGS. No, I'm sorry, that's the weekday number. It's 1-800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. JoePags.com. Coming back. Hey, great to have you the weekend with Joe Pags. Lots of great interviews coming up. The ridiculous impeachment inquiry hearings, the open hearings, the public hearings that we could actually watch on television started this week. We'll talk about exactly what we garnered from that. And what we're finding out is that the left is nuts and they really don't have much of anything. We're going to talk to Tracy Beans about that. She's a reporter from D.C. We're going to also talk to Dr. Jerome Corsi. He, of course, was interrogated by the Mueller investigation, and they tried to scare him into admitting to doing something wrong. Like they threatened to throw him in jail forever. So we'll talk about that as well. We also have on the program today Clint Emerson. He's a former Navy SEAL, a retired Navy SEAL. He's got a new book out. You're going to want to hear about his story and much, much more. So make sure you stick around. It is 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080. Do have time for a couple of phone calls here. Let me say hello and welcome to line one. It's Clifford in Alabama. Clifford, what's going on?
Hey, it's an honor to speak with you, sir.
Thank you.
I'm way down here in Alabama. But if you remember, Obama, back when he first started, he ran on bringing Wall Street and big banks into subjection. Put a whole lot of people out there with that book, Rule for Radicals, those useful idiots to stand out there, a million people, and then turn around on us and then bail out Wall Street.
All right, and he bailed out the auto industry. He bailed out everybody. I mean, a lot of what he said was a lie. He said what he had to say to win, and I think that's what his problem is today. He's thinking to himself that people on my side are not saying what they have to say to win.
All we get from any Democrat or politician is a bunch of jives. But on this way out, with his home state needing as much help as they could get in a lot of poor neighborhoods, a lot of blacks, he ended up giving his Muslim brothers $125 billion.
Well, if you're talking about Iran, he actually gave more than that. He gave him $1.7 billion in cash on pallets, and then he unfroze $150 billion of Iranian money that should have been frozen and had been for a very long time because of what they pulled at our embassy. I don't know why he did it yet. I don't know what that story was other than to say the man just felt like they were somehow wronged.
Two times he got it wrong in one of his speeches. where they had to correct him on his Christian religion, not his Muslim faith, because he kept saying his Muslim faith. And if you remember, back when he was actually doing this, he was threatened by the Muslims saying that they would rape his daughter by her name if he didn't straighten up.
You know, I never heard about anybody threatening to rape his daughter. So that's something new on me. But Clifford, I appreciate you. I've never heard that. That's new on me. I can certainly look it up. But if somebody had said that, if some Muslim said, "I'm going to rape your daughter," I think that I would have known about that. But when it comes to Obama, exactly right. He said one thing. Well, first of all, he gave very flowery things, hope and change. Yes, we can. Si se puede. Let's change the future of America. Whatever. He wasn't saying specifically in public what he wanted to do. In private, he was saying we have to shut down the coal industry. In private, he was saying we have to take over healthcare. In private, he was saying, we have to say things in a quiet get-together here in San Francisco, things that would not be acceptable to those who are clinging to their guns and their religion. Obama was a master at deception and diversion, and he still is. But now he's mad because he set the groundwork. He showed people how you do this. And as much as a narcissist as he is, and he believes that he is the one and only, the savior, he still needs them to do what he did because he can't run anymore. And they're not very good at it. I mean, there are many people on stage who think they're Obama. Beto O'Rourke thought he could emulate Obama's cadence. He didn't do very well with it. You've got Julian Castro, who tries to talk like Obama, not getting it done. Cory Booker thinks he's the next Obama. Not happening, Spartacus. So he's upset. He sees the writing on the wall, and something's got to change very, very quickly. Dave on line two. What's up, Dave?
Hey, earlier in your program, you mentioned white nationalism.
No, I didn't.
In your commenting.
Nope. I mentioned no white nationalism at all today.
Oh, well, anyways. Let's talk about it.
Okay, let's go.
The United States is like 66% white.
Right.
And Canada is like 95% white.
I don't know if it's that high, but it's up there, yeah.
Yeah, so my point is, why is the left complaining about white nationalism in the USA when there's Canada, which is 90% white, and yet they don't complain about that? In Mexico is like 95% brown, and Africa is 95% black, and China is 95% Asian, but nobody complains about the Mexicans and Africa and Asian having their nationalism, but the United States with only 66%, they complain about that.
Hi, Dave, appreciate you. I wasn't talking about that. It's a very odd topic to bring up, but I don't believe in white nationalism or black nationalism. I believe in nationalism, where we love the country. We'll be back.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags. Across America, it's The Weekend with Joe Pags. To talk to Joe, call 800-501-7080. And now, The Weekend. Here's Joe Pags.
Great radio stations across the land, joepags.com. All the social media there, plus scroll down, sign up for the newsletter. Just put your email address in that box. Or you can watch the live video feed as well. It's the Joe Pag. It's the Weekend with Joe Pags. Glad to have you along for the ride. It's been a momentous week, a monumental week, in that we're having this ridiculous witch hunt broadcast live across the nation. It's a ridiculous witch hunt by Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and the far left in this country that is truly embarrassing to our country in the eyes of the world. It's embarrassing because anybody with any knowledge at all knows that there's nothing there. This is a witch hunt, nothing more, nothing less. Period. End of story. Have a nice one. That's all it is. This is an attempt. Al Green, the representative from Houston, at least admitted it. This is an attempt to stop him from getting reelected. AOC now says, of course, we have to impeach, otherwise he might get reelected. This is about politics. They've all but admitted it. But this week, Adam Schiff brought out a couple of star witnesses that completely crumbled almost immediately when they came out. And I wanted to talk to somebody who's been in the middle of this witch hunt on the receiving end as a victim, Dr. Jerome Corsi. He was actually interrogated by Robert Mueller and the FBI in the Russia collusion investigation, which showed no Russia collusion, and was threatened. I wanted to get his take on what he's seeing. And also, he's got a book about the border that offers some solutions that you might not have heard. Doctor, I appreciate you. How are you?
Great, and great to be back with you, Joe. I really enjoy your show, and I love being on it. Thank you.
Well, we enjoy having you on it. You've got a book called Minutemen, The Battle to Secure America's Borders, that you did several years ago, but it's very pertinent today. We'll get to that in a moment. If you don't mind, let's start with the Kabuki Theater that we're watching unfold in Washington, D.C.
I watched it all day long. I mean, it was...
it's hard not to, right? I mean...
You have to watch it, but I felt like I was... These two guys from the State Department were, I felt like they're, you know, in a college lecture again, listening to political science course and falling asleep. I mean,
yeah,
they're 40-minute opening statements about NATO and Ukraine and all these things.
Crazy. It's,
and it got down to it. And I think Jim Jordan's right. You know, this guy told this guy who told this guy, you can't prosecute or impeach the president of the United States on office gossip, you know?
Right.
And who put the State Department in charge of foreign policy anyway? I mean, do I really care what this guy, Ambassador Taylor, thinks about Ukraine policy?
No, you don't, and I don't, and the American people don't. No. So it's an interesting question. When Bill Taylor said, I don't have any direct knowledge, but I was told by others, I mean, when that line happened right then, the Republicans should have stood up and said, there you go, it's over, yeah, have a nice day. This is hearsay.
Over.
That's all it is. Hearsay, nothing more, nothing less. You had Joaquin Castro, who is a lawyer, Dr. Corsi, pretending like hearsay wasn't a big deal, like you can take hearsay.
The Democrats were promoting hearsay today. They would say it's good evidence. I mean, in a trial, it's this evidence, you know, hearsay. You stand up and object as a lawyer, and the judge says witness excused. I mean, if that's all they've got,
that's it.
You don't want this. This guy told this guy told this guy, and besides, the State Department is not in the Constitution. It's not in Article 2 to direct the foreign policy. If these guys think they like NATO and they like the EU and they think Donald Trump is wrong, Donald Trump is the president. He has the right to do the foreign policy. And these guys are supposed to implement Donald Trump's policy, not bellyache about it.
Well, if these are their star witnesses, Dr. Corsi, then they're in big trouble. It's Dr. Jerome Corsi. The book about the border is Minutemen, The Battle to Secure America's Borders. What is the book about your Mueller experience?
Well, it's Silent No More is the title.
Silent No
now.
More. Yes. Yeah. Make sure you go and get that as well. Hopefully a lot of people have.
Oh, yeah.
When you were sitting down and you were interrogated by the Mueller probe for 30 or 40 hours, and basically they threatened you with going to jail for lying to them, this is the same thing they did to General Flynn. They didn't have him on anything other than, oh, you lied to us, and General Flynn didn't even know that he was being interrogated, didn't even have a lawyer with him. Your life was basically threatened by them that you could spend the rest of your life in jail. If, in fact, you didn't cooperate, and again, they went away from you because you stood firm. That's what's happening here, right? The president hasn't done anything impeachable, so Adam Schiff is trying to make a case that he's obstructing the investigation into finding out that there was nothing impeachable. I mean, that's really what it is. He didn't do anything wrong. We're going to get you doing something wrong, though, in the process.
Well, that's a good point, Joe. And, you know, the truth is that executive privilege and exerting executive privilege, saying that Mulvaney's chief of staff, and he's not just going to go over there and testify to Congress about our private conversations in the White House, is, you know, I've got to have some confidentiality to do the job.
Yeah.
That's been respected by the courts for a long time. And it's not obstruction of justice to say I want to run the office of the president of the United States correctly. And I think President Trump, very much like I did, I said, no, I'm not going to suborn perjury. You're not going to do that with me. I'm not going to make Mueller's case. You know, if Mueller, they're going to put me in jail for 25 or 35 years and obstruction of justice, I'd go ahead. I'm not going to swear before a judge and God to a crime I didn't commit.
Yeah.
I did not talk to Mueller. I'm not going to let you break me, because that would have made Mueller's case. That would have been the connection to Roger Stone, to Assange, so that President Trump, then candidate Trump, could influence how Assange was going to release these emails. It didn't happen. And again, the same thing Schiff is doing. He's made up a narrative that he wants to pin on the president, but the narrative doesn't fit the facts of the conversation.
Right.
And we have a mutual security, a mutual legal assistance treaty with Ukraine. So we have, the president has a right to be concerned about corruption. You know, why send another $230 million when Ukraine under Obama and even the first years under President Trump stole $3 billion of U.S. federal aid and the IMF money? It's all gone. Yeah. I mean, he says, I don't want to send another $250 million to this country until I know that this guy Zelensky, newly elected, is going to be honest. That's
and interestingly, well, interestingly, the Democrats don't really want him to investigate what really happened in 2016. The president and his conversation with Zelensky wasn't about help me in 2020. It was about, let's find out what happened. Was there corruption from the then vice president and his family? I mean, what was going on there? And I always thought the left wanted to find out what really happened in 2016. It turns out they only wanted to know what really happened if there was, in fact, Russia collusion with the Trump campaign. And, of course, we know that there wasn't. What's interesting is I find there to be a twofold reason why they're doing this. And Doctor, I wonder what your opinion is on this. Number one, they're doing it because if they say we impeach Donald Trump, they're hoping people won't vote for him next year because they can't beat him fair and square. The second reason, the second reason why I think they're doing it is because they've been trying to get the 25th Amendment evoked in a, from day one. If, in fact, we find out he doesn't have to do the job, he's unfit to do the job, hey, look, Mike Pence was going to sign the letter that he couldn't do the job, well, this whole Ukraine thing proves he can't do the job. So we've got him on that. This is only really to get him out of the way because they can't beat him.
I agree entirely. I think that's the Democrats realize they don't have a candidate. They've got Bloomberg jumping in now, and that's ridiculous because Bloomberg doesn't have a chance. I mean, he's,
right.
You know, and the whole thing is this is guilty conscience on the Democrats' part. Look, Joe, they've called an artillery strike on their own position. So it's wrong. President Trump's going to get impeached because he mentions Burisma and Hunter Biden corruption. So that's now on the agenda. Casualty number one is Hunter Biden and Joe Biden's campaign. Casualty number two, Hillary Clinton, because now we know that Hillary intervened with this Alexandria Chalupa in order to get information on Manafort out of Ukraine during 2016 to hurt Donald Trump's campaign. Casualty number three is the Democratic Party, because now these guys aren't interested in facts. They aren't interested in truth. They become a Democratic Socialist Party. The whole party's moved over the cliff or to the left, and the American people aren't going to buy it. This hearing is a sham. It's like a Stalin hearing. Schiff is interrupting the GOPs, limiting their time. They can't call witnesses. The American people are not going to buy an unfair process. They aren't going to buy it. It's not going to happen.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And it's, Dr. Jerome Corsi had one-on-one experiences with the Mueller investigation, and that entire probe, and was basically threatened with basically it would be a life sentence. As you said to me before, at your age, it would be a life sentence.
Correct.
So, and you stood firm, and I appreciate that. Get that book, Silence No More. The book from a few years ago, Minutemen, The Battle to Secure America's Borders. You've been studying this and investigating it for about 13 years now, what we can do on the border. It's my opinion, and I want your thoughts on this, that the left doesn't want it done because they want future voters for them. Some on the right don't want it done because they do get cheap labor. I think most people on the right are waking up that that's not a good reason for it, but if there was a wherewithal from the right when they had the House and Senate and the presidency, they could have done something about it. So what's the real solution here?
Well, and I agree with you entirely, Joe. Here's the solution that this product TerraBlock, TerraBlock.
Okay.
It's made by HESCO, HESCO. They're an established defense contractor. What they specialize in is the rapid deployment of perimeter defenses for our troops in combat zones and in harm's way.
Okay.
So the president's going to send troops to Syria. He's going to send troops to wherever, Iraq. You can't wait for 3 years to have these 35-foot steel barriers constructed and put in place. You got to have 24 hours. We need a secure encampment. So what HESCO has done is created these modular systems. I mean, you could get a container and a pickup truck and just drop them on the border.
Wow.
The Army Corps of Engineers comes back in and assembles them. They are back-end loaded with dirt. They're mobile. You can move them around to reposition them. The videos on the internet show you that you try to drive a semi-truck through the HESCO barriers. The semi-truck is stopped. You can't climb them because it's got a mesh wall face. You can't get your fingers in there.
Yeah.
You can't throw a ladder over it because it's spring-loaded. It'll pop down and then pop right back up.
Wow.
And it's smart. It's a smart wall, so you can coordinate it with all of the different you know, troops on the border or Border Patrol, National Guard. The key is we can have the 1,200 miles that remain unsecured of the border with a terror block put into place by Election Day at a cost of $1 billion. That's
a lot less than $25 billion that we're talking about. Let me ask you this. Is it a temporary solution, or can that be permanent as well? Do you put that up and then build the permanent wall, or that can be there for good?
I think this is permanent because I think, look, the 35-foot wall, they're sawing through it. You know, it's a wall of China solution to the problem. I started watching TV in a little tiny Philco TV where I watch the test pattern all day,
right,
black and white. Today I'm watching, you know, HD TV on my cell phone.
Yeah, true.
We need a modern solution. If this TerraBlock system by HESCO is good enough to protect our troops in combat, and we don't have, I mean, who's more precious to the United States as human resources than our military defending us? It will protect the citizens on the border who are now unprotected in the middle of a drug war.
If this is available now, Doctor, and obviously the government knows about it because they're deploying it elsewhere, why haven't we done it? What's your opinion about why we're sitting on that?
I think it's because it's out of the box. You know, you take a military application and you put it in a civilian context. You know, we're not going to war with Mexico, but this is really, it's also used in concerts and other issues with creating barriers to protect the passageways. But the point is, you know, it shows like yours, I think this show is incredibly important to get this word. Just go to the internet, search TerraBlock, TerraBlock, and HESCO, HESCO. Watch the videos. You can see the troops putting these barriers in place. It's a flexible system, and you know, HESCO even has barriers to prevent floods. You know, so when you're in the situation like the Texas with the Rio Grande and with mountains, you can have the engineers figure out the right mix of HESCO TerraBlock components to make it a secure smart wall fixture, and you can move it around as circumstances change. I think it's a permanent solution. I mean, you know, it's certainly better than these 35-foot walls. I'm not going to criticize them, but they need flat ground and straight lines. The border in Texas is anything but that. I've been down
A lot of places you can't put a wall like that on. I'm almost out of time. It's Dr. Jerome Corsi. Minutemen, The Battle to Secure America's Borders is the book that you wrote several years ago that outlines how we can get this done. I hope everybody will go and buy that, as well as Silent No More. When it comes to the TerraBlock solution, as you just said, though, obviously you've already outlined the argument. It's a military solution. It's a mechanism of the military. Why are we declaring war against the poor children in cages? You know what the left is going to say. How do you respond to that? Give me about 30 seconds or so.
You say by saying, look, the citizens of the United States, we're dealing with a drug cartel war.
Yeah.
I mean, Mexico's become a drug cartel masquerading as a nation. I mean, it's out of control. And look at that massacre that occurred about a week ago of the Mormon
disgusting
family.
Yep.
It's disgusting. And we need to protect the border from the criminals, from the cartels, drug cartels, from the gangs, these MS-13 criminal gangs. We've sponsored families. My family has, from El Salvador. I'm for legal immigration. But we've got to control, when you get a drug cartel war going on, American citizens on the border need protection. They need it now. $22 or $25 billion will take 5 or 6 years to complete this wall the way they're doing it now. That's 5 or 6 years in which people can get killed. People will watch the videos on TerraBlock and call the congressman, call the White House. The White House will listen. And Joe, I want to thank you tremendously for the opportunity on your show to get this option in front of the American people. Take a look at it with your own eyes, and I think you'll conclude this is the solution to border security.
Looking forward to reading up more about it and going to watch the videos. And it's always a pleasure to have you on. You actually add an awful lot to my program. So thanks for coming on every time. It's Dr. Jerome Corsi, great author, a great mind in America. Go and read his books. The latest one is Silent No More. Get this one about the border, Minutemen, The Battle to Secure America's Borders. I appreciate Dr. Corsi coming on. Always great information. It's always interesting to hear exactly what somebody goes through when they're interrogated by somebody or by some operation like the Mueller investigation. And his thoughts on the border, pretty interesting too. 1-800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. JoePags.com. Stay here. Glad to have you here on the weekend with Joe Pags. 1-800-501-7080. If you'd rather opine via email or Twitter or Facebook, you can do that too. Just stop by joepags.com, joepags.com. When you hear Dr. Corsi, who's in his 70s, talk about how he was directly threatened by the Mueller investigative team. Tens of hours of sitting there answering questions. They try to allege that he wrote emails and he's lying about knowing about the emails between Roger Stone and Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and all this other crap. You find out clearly what the government will do to you if they don't really have a case against you. And I made the direct relationship between what the president's facing and what General Flynn faced. General Flynn did nothing against the law. The FBI asked to talk to him, didn't say it was going to be an investigation, an interrogation, didn't need a lawyer. He goes there, sure, absolutely, I'll talk to you. And they, after that, don't make any allegations to wrongdoing as the incoming NSA director. In fact, what they say is, you lied to us, that's the charge. He loses a rank, might be going to jail, loses his house because he had to pay for the lawyers. And they think that's okay. They didn't get him on anything real other than, oh, you lied to us. Same thing with Corsi. We're going to get you for lying to us. They never came back to him because he stood his ground. And he had good backbone. Same thing they're trying with Trump. If Trump tweets during the hearings, that's obstruction. If you won't allow his chief of staff to go and testify for presidential privilege, that's obstruction. If he farts the wrong way, that's obstruction. That's their game. 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080. Tracy Benz, when we come back, the latest on those inquiry hearings out of Washington, that Schiff show. Adam Schiff, get it? Keep it here.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.
Great radio stations across the land. JoePags.com. That's the website. It's The Weekend with Joe Pags. Thanks for stopping. 1-800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. Much of the nation was glued to their televisions or watching videos later of the inquiry that keeps on going on. They have actually brought in their best and brightest witnesses, and Adam Schiff and the committee have actually hurt themselves and made their case worse. There is no impeachable offense. There was no leverage or quid pro quo or bribery or extortion. But they continue because now they've got to save face. And they know if they don't impeach this guy, and by the way, impeachment doesn't mean remove. That just means that you're charging him with something impeachable. Then the Senate gets to do a trial, which he would be found not guilty in. But they have to impeach him so they can say, we impeached him. That's why you shouldn't vote for him. I got with a D.C. reporter from UncoverDC.com, Tracy Beans, to talk about exactly what we saw yesterday, the day two of the hearings, and pretty important information she found out about the first star witness from Wednesday, Bill Taylor. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm living the dream. Glad to have you back, and I wanted to have you back soon because, holy crap, everything's happening in D.C. And it has been for a long time, but this is sort of the culmination for me of the American public seeing how inept the left is, how horribly deceitful Adam Schiff is, and why voting Democrat in the last election, in my opinion, not putting this on you, was a really, really bad move for the House of Representatives. So let's break down what we've seen so far. Adam Schiff, the chairman of this committee, that I don't think should even be doing this, it should be the Judiciary Committee, and this is the Intel Committee for some reason, he has brought two star witnesses out. This is 2 days ago when this thing started. Taylor and Kent. These two were not only a bust, I think they really hurt what his intention was to begin with. Let's start with Taylor, if you don't mind, because you really break down who this guy is and what his relationships were over in Ukraine. What's the issue with him that you uncovered?
So in the original deposition where he was testifying behind closed doors, they leaked out his 15-page opening statement, which mentioned his resume. USAID, U.S.-Ukraine Business Council, all those other organizations, Atlantic Council Cooperative, stuff like that. And then he mentions he was sitting on the board of a small Ukrainian NGO. And that's basically all he says about it. I wanted to find out what that was, so I did. It's called the East Europe Foundation, and it is a small Ukrainian NGO, but the problem is it's funded in large part by George Soros' Open Society Foundation.
Get out of here. What?
Surprise, right?
And that wasn't disclosed. I just some small NGO. You don't have to worry about it. There's nothing to see here.
Right. He really glossed right over it. And, you know, that's why, obviously. And, you know, he didn't sit on the board of this NGO while he was ambassador. But he did sit on the board of a small NGO with funding from Open Society Foundation, which is something, as a board member, you don't accept funding without knowing where it's coming from and who it's coming from. So there's collaboration there. And, you know, we George Soros has actually 5 offices for Open Society in Ukraine and 3 in the United States, just to give you an idea of his stranglehold in Ukraine. Yeah. So
it's Tracy Beans, uncoverdc.com. Go to her website right now. It's very interesting information, because that obviously shows a background of somebody who is on the board of an organization that obviously is a far left-wing progressive organization. The same people that want open borders, that want globalist society here and across the world. The same people that want district attorneys in local counties around this country to ignore prostitution and don't worry about drug use. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. And this guy sat on the board of an organization that took funding from that guy. I mean, when that was discovered by you, great job. Why wasn't it discovered by Republicans before this guy was even questioned? Why wasn't he called to task on it?
I don't know why they didn't call him to task. You know, Breitbart also had a great dig on him as well that uncovered a lot of stuff too. And we haven't seen any of it mentioned. I think really, honestly, the reason is they don't need it. They really don't need it. They can dissect this as it is. Jim Jordan did a fantastic job on Wednesday when he told him, you know, he asked him a bunch of questions, and then Taylor says, well, you know, what he did when he held back that aid is he ruined the strength of the U.S.-Ukraine relationship. And Jordan's like, we're not here to talk about that. That's not an issue here.
Right.
It's, you know, whether or not there was a quid pro quo between the president and Ukraine, and there was not. That's not these guys' jobs to dictate policy and to work. That's just not what they're there for.
You go there and you represent our best interest is what an ambassador does. It is Tracy Beans, B-E-A-N-Z, and her website is uncoverdc.com. One of the first sound bites I saw from Bill Taylor was him saying, let me be clear. I haven't heard any of this first person. I didn't hear any of it. I'm just telling you what people told me they heard. So in other words, I'm here to tell you I've got a bunch of hearsay if you'd like to hear it, and a bunch of rumor mill stuff if you'd like to hear that as well. I mean, he really did say almost those exact words, right? I mean, at that point, why don't you just dismiss the guy? Oh, so you don't know anything then?
Yeah, why don't we just bring in Sondland and talk to him? You know what I mean? Like, we don't need to bring you in here to tell us what Sondland said when we have access to Sondland. It's not like he passed away or something and we can't get him anymore. Right. And that's, you know, and even the left in the hearing was trying to say hearsay evidence is better than firsthand evidence.
Yeah, well, Joaquin Castro, who's a lawyer, who's from my city, San Antonio, he actually alleged that hearsay was cool. And I'm going, dude, what law school did you go to, and where have you gone in front of a presiding judge who said, hey, Joaquin, what kind of hearsay do you have for me today?
Yeah, you know, can you imagine a justice system in which, what kind of crimes could we get them on if that were all we needed?
I can't imagine Judge Judy accepting hearsay, okay? It is Tracy Beans, uncoverdc.com. So Representative Stefanik from New York, who's a rising star that I hadn't heard of before, absolutely for about 4.5 minutes takes Kent and Taylor to task, asks them direct questions about how the Obama administration, in fact, didn't do anything about Crimea, about Ukraine, about helping out that country that we wanted to be an ally, didn't do anything about corruption that happened under his watch, didn't give them a military aid, in fact, rolled over on the side of Putin against Ukraine over and over again, while this president and this administration has, in fact, done all of the things to help Ukraine and to try to uncover corruption and to figure out exactly what's going on when it comes to Russia v. Ukraine. I mean, that was exposed very clearly by her, was it not?
Yeah, actually, she was actually the one who got James Comey to trip all over himself when she asked why the Gang of Eight was not briefed on the Spygate operation that was going on, Crossfire Hurricane. So she's been good for a while. She's also the youngest woman in Congress, or she was anyway, from her district. She's great.
Which is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's been on fire because it's just factual. I mean, it's not hard. These are facts. And facts are very powerful. You know, when all you've got is, especially today, like the victim, she's the victim. Yovanovitch is a victim and she's a poor woman. And when it's emotion versus facts, it's easy for the American people to see.
Yeah.
There's nothing here. Like, legitimately, there's no case here. None.
I couldn't agree with you more. When I was watching Devin Nunes today, he was saying, reading some things and saying, and then he said, I'm going to give the rest of my time to Representative Stefanik. And Adam Schiff didn't let him.
No.
How is that? I mean, the procedure is you own the time. It's your time. You can step aside for anybody. Adam Schiff is trying to pretend, or maybe he made a new policy, a new regulation, that you can only give it to your counsel. Well, I've never heard of that. I mean, I've been watching these sort of hearings and these sort of committees, Tracy, for years and years. And always, whoever is speaking can give his or her time to anybody. They could give it to the janitor if they wanted to. So yeah. What was that all about?
Well, rules for thee, but not for me, right? I mean, that's what we seem to see over and over again. I think that that was a bit of flusteredness, if that's a word, because Devin Nunes had just read into the record the transcript of the first call with Zelensky, which indicated literally zero condition for meeting at the White House. And that blew up the entire story again. So he was a little bit on edge, and I don't know if he expected or knew what Stefanik was going to say, and probably for that reason wouldn't let her speak.
Well, he knew that she was going to do a great job. Again, it's Tracy Beans, B-E-A-N-Z. Go and follow her on Twitter. Is it at Tracy Beans? What is your Twitter?
It's at Tracy Beans.
There you go. So go follow her right now. Tracy with no E. It's T-R-A-C-Y-B-E-A-N-Z.
Thanks.
UncoveredDC.com. Go in and check out the website. Amazing storytelling and reporting on exactly what's going on. As I'm watching this unfold, you see what the left's attack is on Jim Jordan, right? This is all they have.
Yeah. Are you talking about the wrestling incident that's recycled
now?
No.
Oh, okay. That's going to be brought up forever, and it's there's nothing there. That's a complete nothing burger.
Yep.
Their complaint about Jim Jordan is that he's not showing dignity because he's not wearing a jacket.
Oh, no.
Tracy?
Really?
That's the complaint. Have you not seen the Twitters?
No, I haven't.
Put on a jacket, Jim. Oh, yeah. That's the big complaint. So Jim Jordan was brought on, and I wonder what your thoughts are as a reporter on that beat every day.
Mm-hmm.
When you heard that they're going to bring Jim Jordan on, I was a bit skeptical. How is Nunes going to have any power, any authority? Is it they're going to usurp him? But man, I think that it's gone above and beyond what they could have hoped for Jim Jordan to do.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. The four of them, there have been like kind of four standouts: Stefanik, Jordan, Ratcliffe, and Nunes.
Yeah.
And they've really done a great job of just asking the right questions and making the right points to get the Republicans' message across that there's no there at all with this thing. Strong members, glad they're on our side.
Yeah.
Ratcliffe completely decimated the story again when he asked Taylor, did he think that Zelensky had credibility and integrity and you think he'd lie? No. Okay, well, here, let me read some of the things he said to 300 media outlets.
I mean, it's laughable because it's so stupid. What bothers me is that so many people are just blinded by it, indoctrinated by it, and they're just you know, groupthink people that want to accept anything they hear. First of all, Adam Schiff would not be the person that I would ever say I'm going to follow his lead because he lied about what was in the transcript, completely wholesale lied until somebody tweeted about it to a representative. He wasn't even called out about it for 20 minutes. He lied about having Russia collusion evidence that he would reveal soon. That's, you know, the Mueller report's over. He never revealed it because it doesn't exist. The guy is just not telling the truth. So why people would get behind him like the Pied Piper is stunning to me. But I want to talk about this tweet today that the president sent out.
Good.
Adam Schiff reads a tweet that was sent out during, what was her name? I can't think of her name off the top of my head.
Who is Yovanovitch.
So Yovanovitch is sitting there, and she's giving her testimony. And while that's happening, the president's watching it live. And live tweets it, and the chairman of the committee, unbeknownst to the person who's testifying, reads the tweet, and then people on Twitter and people on the left are all saying, well, he was intimidating her. She didn't know what happened until Schiff told her it happened. So was it intimidating? Was he right to read that as she was being questioned? And was there, because I guess Ken Starr is now the new, he's the big hero of the left today because he said, well, that was inappropriate and somebody should have talked to him before he sent out the tweet. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, first of all, Ken Starr has been under fire from the left the entire time because he's been supporting the president and all of a sudden now he's their best friend. Yes.
Right.
It's ridiculous. He's the one who intimidated the witness. I saw you tweet that earlier and I was like, yes, absolutely, because she would never have known. And some people are like, well, she's not done testifying yet. And I'm like, they're not going to call her in the Senate. She's useless. There's no information that she could possibly provide that means anything to this whatsoever.
Right.
There's nothing there.
Without a doubt. And the president saying that she wasn't very good at the job. How is that intimidating her? She was literally giving testimony as he tweeted that, so she couldn't see it unless she said, hold on, I think the president just tweeted something. Let me read it. She would have had no knowledge whatsoever had Schiff not brought it up. Schiff brings it up as intimidation, and as you said, and as I tweeted earlier, of course it was him intimidating her. It was Adam Schiff trying to say, look at what the president's saying about you. Isn't this horrible? And she would have had no knowledge whatsoever.
Yeah, he even pulled victim blaming when the right was questioning her today. It's really sick. You know, it makes me laugh in a way because Fox News went nuts over this. They went nuts over it today. All the hosts, everybody was talking about how it was obstruction of justice. And I'm just sitting there like, stop watching the legacy media. Stop it. Just stop. Yeah.
Soon Fox will be saying it's bribery and extortion as well, which is what they changed from quid pro quo the other day. All right, last question is Tracy Beans, B-E-A-N-Z. Go to her website, uncoverdc.com. Is it lost on anybody? I don't think it's lost on you that the left is literally saying, Adam Schiff, Nancy Pelosi, and the others are saying, we're here to defend Ukraine from this horrible extortionist Donald Trump. Well, at the same time, for that to be true, Tracy, they're calling Zelensky a flat-out liar. Zelensky himself has said it didn't happen in the first call, didn't happen in the second call. I've never felt leveraged. I've never felt like I had to do anything. I had a great conversation. I didn't even know that they were holding back military aid, and if they were, we eventually got it, and Obama never sent us any of it. Is that lost on anybody? I think it's lost on a lot of people that Zelensky is being called a liar by the people who say they're defending him.
Yeah, I know. The same people that don't defend this country. Yes. Yeah. I don't think it's lost on people with brains, and those are the only people that really matter, to be honest, because I don't think the ratings were very good on Wednesday, and I doubt that they were much better today. We'll see what happens for this next hearing that's coming up. I think it's Monday.
Well, I mean, this is early on still, and he has failed horribly, Schiff has, in his star witness upbringing. And I think that Nancy Pelosi is really going to take a chance on the Democratic Party's future if they decide to actually vote on impeachment, because so far they've shown nothing.
I know, and AOC just said yesterday this entire thing is for unity within the caucus and to stop President Trump from being elected in 2020. Thank you so much, AOC, for sharing your honest thoughts with the world.
Yeah, she's echoing what Al Green said months ago. We have to impeach him or else he might win again.
Yep.
Tracy Beans, go to uncoverdc.com. Follow her at Tracy Beans on Twitter. Really glad to have you on today. Thank you. We always appreciate Tracy Beans stopping by. Does a great job, and I'm sure you got something out of it. Uncoverdc.com. Or at Tracy Beans, and Beans is B-E-A-N-Z on Twitter. Your thoughts when we come back, 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. Stay right here. Hi, great to have you the weekend with Joe Pags. We appreciate Tracy Beans coming on. Plenty more coming your way next hour. It's going to be David Limbaugh, Rush's brother. He's got a new book out about the left and what they're trying to do in this country. And also Clint Emerson, retired Navy SEAL. Make sure you stick around for that. You're going to love to hear his stories as well. He's got a brand new book out coming either right out now or it's going to be out very soon. I think it's out now. Let me go to line one. It's Ken in Illinois. Ken, what's on your mind? Hi.
Hey there, Joe. Good to hear your show.
Thank you.
First time caller.
Great.
And I noticed that the biggest problem with the Democratic Party is there is no left, there is no right. It's all the same. You've got politicians that are willing to empathize and lie any way they can. And the biggest problem with that is they're going to lie, they're going to empathize, they're going to deceive as many people as possible, so that they can get their people out on the vote.
I believe that's true, but I do want to go back to Obama for a second. He is so prolific at how he lies. He is so prolific at making you feel a certain way where other politicians really can't. Other politicians have a hard time being that superstar that idolistic sort of image that he became, because he did some of the worst things we've seen in our history in this country. Economically, race relations, I mean, in wartime with our enemies, that it's startling that so many people still fawn over the bare mention of his name. So I think that he was so good at it that he's really angry that his party isn't as good at it right now, and that's why he came out.
Being an Illinois voter, I saw it from the beginning. He is a Chicago quote unquote resident, and yet failed to even address the truth and work on the things that he promised. So he's been a liar from the get go, and he's good at it. So
and I agree, there are liars on both sides. I just don't think that there's a liar now, an actor now, who's as good as he was, and he sees the writing on the wall that Trump is not going to be beaten unless somebody steps up.
They're going to try their best, by, you know, I'm wondering what's next week on the Schiff sandwich. What are they going to put on there? More lies, more conjecture, yes. More inference.
Yep, all of that. And I appreciate the call, Ken. Thank you. No, it's all a good point. Yeah, you're not going to get anything new next week. They're going to continue to try to bolster an already weak argument, which isn't going to happen. I mean, it's not going to go anywhere. Let me go to Bud in Iowa. Bud, I've got less than a minute. You got to make it fast. Let's go.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I wanted to ask a question. I haven't heard anybody explain this before, but in the instance where, let's say, the House of Representatives votes to impeach and the Senate, of course, shoots down, is that going to have any impact on Trump's 2020 campaign?
Well, that's the idea. They want it to. It won't literally have an impact, no, because he still gets to go and campaign and do the rallies and do all that stuff. If the House of Representatives votes to impeach him, that means that they're levying charges. Then they send it to the Senate that holds a trial. Bill Clinton was impeached. He was found not guilty. I think Andrew Johnson was impeached. There was an impeachment inquiry on Richard Nixon, but he wasn't impeached. If they were to impeach Donald Trump, the trial would happen. That wouldn't take him off the campaign trail. He would have representatives go there and talk and speak for him. And the Senate being run by Republicans, one would assume, would not vote to, would not rule him guilty. Quick break, back after this.
Across America, it's The Weekend with Joe Pags. To talk to Joe, call 800-501-7080. And now, The Weekend. Here's Joe Pags.
Great radio stations across the land, joepags.com. That's the one-stop website for the email address, the social media, news stories that we cover. Sign up for the mailing list. You're going to get that 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. All things that you want that go associated with a radio program like this. This is The Weekend version of the Joe Pag Show. Glad to have you here. David Limbaugh, Rush's brother, is a great author. He's a lawyer. He's a very smart, intelligent guy. He knows so much about faith and its connectivity to our country, and also about conservative versus liberal. We've got David on. He's got a brand new book coming out. David, how are you?
Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure to have you on. It's been a long time. Let's not wait so long next time.
Yes, sir.
You've got this book out called Guilty by Reason of Insanity. And I want to start from the premise. I know what the book is about, and of course you're right. But the question I always have, David, is these people on the left, these lunatics that don't seem to like our country at all and want to change it for the worse, are Americans, generally speaking.
Yeah.
And they're reaping the benefits of this great land and what we provide and what it provides. Why do they hate it so much? And are they really insane, or do they have something else going on?
Yeah, I think insane is really a euphemism. Insanity is really a euphemism for something worse. I think we're almost dealing with spiritual warfare. But it's so bizarre. But the left has been doing this for a long time. It's just voting against the interests of America. It's just that they're more out of the closet now. And I think part of it is they have been so convinced that our side is evil. And socialism is good. It's compassionate. Capitalists are evil. Abortion is wonderful, and not just reluctantly okay, grudgingly okay, but now it's something they want to shout about, glorify the killing of innocent babies. Amazing. How do you describe that other than in spiritual terms? And open borders, immigration, meaning no respect for the national boundaries, no respect for national sovereignty, no respect for the rule of law, giving sanctuary to criminals, giving sanctuary to illegal aliens, and There are so many other issues that they are off the charts extreme on. It's hard to describe, but I don't know. I think there's something off with their these aren't evil people, but there's something seriously off kilter with their ideas.
Yeah, I can't disagree. It's David Limbaugh. Get this book, Guilty by Reason of Insanity. So when we talk about people who love socialism, the minions that love it only love it because they're being lied to about what it is. Those who want socialism, who are in power, the AOCs, the Squad, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, these people, they know what it is, and they want it because they would be the ones actually sitting on top of the imperialism. Well, not the imperialism. They'd be sitting on top as the emperors. They would be telling us the way to live, what to eat, what to drive, where to work, how much money to have, how to live, what to wear. They would be telling us everything, and then they would tell us, look, we've given you everything. You've got to keep voting for us. Socialism as a concept has never, ever worked for anybody other than those who were on top of it, those who were lording over everybody else. So why is it that the minions, those who just have been indoctrinated and believe it, are buying the BS they're saying and not listening to people like you and me who know what they're trying to pull on us?
Well, I want to expand on this. It's a great question. First place, even though the polls show that the millennials support socialism, they also show that they don't know what it means. And I think they've been...
Isn't that startling? How can you support it if you don't know what it means? It's stunning.
It is stunning that they would even answer the question in a poll if they don't know what they're answering.
Right.
But that never stops them. I think there's been an indoctrination going on for decades in academia, the media, and Hollywood. And it is they only tell them half the story. And they don't just build up socialism. This is important. The flip side of the same coin, distinct and different, is that they demonize capitalism. They demonize conservatives on every issue. Notice, we're racist. We don't just have a different idea. We're racist. We're bigots. We're homophobic. We are greedy capitalists. The reason we want to guard the borders, protect the borders, is because we don't like Mexicans because of their skin color. Yeah. Now, think about how preposterous all this is. And this works. The left has no substantive ideas, no policy agenda that works anymore. But what does work is polarizing us and demonizing us on the basis of our character. So I think what the rank and file Democrat does, people, for example, in my town, who are they're not as conservative as I am, but they're not anywhere near as liberal as the leaders of their party, but they will vote for leaders of the party. So they might as well be leftists.
Right.
But so they'll vote for them because I think in part it's our team versus their team. Republicans don't care. They really believe that capitalism is uncompassionate, that socialism is compassionate, that open borders is compassionate, tolerant, inclusive. All these empty bromides, emotion-fueled bromides. If you look at the other side of socialism, if you look at capitalism, what I've done in three chapters of my book is do a deep dive into capitalism versus socialism. Socialism isn't even good in theory. That's been a myth forever. It impoverishes and enslaves. Plus, it makes everybody equal. It says that there's no that there shouldn't be private property. The Bible supports private property in both the 8th and 10th commandments implicitly against covetousness and against stealing. And socialism constricts the economic pie, reduces economic growth, and necessarily restricts our liberties because economic and political liberty are inextricably intertwined. There's nothing good about it. They get to control it. There's always been wealth inequality. There's been wealth inequality throughout world history. And that was not capitalism. Capitalism was introduced a few hundred years ago. We have robust explosions of prosperity. And you still have some income inequality, of course. But mainly the radical inequalities are between those, the places like us, which are developed nations, and third world nations that haven't had introductions of capitalism yet.
Right.
So it's a radical difference. But why should everybody be the same anyway? We ought to, human nature is such that we respond to incentives. We respond to profits, prices, scarcity, all the rest of it that liberals pretend they understand in economics, but they don't. And they act like, even in this healthcare thing, talking about demonizing profits, healthcare for all. If you read some of their plans, they actually want to eliminate the profit motive from healthcare. And they have this myth that profit, just like Karl Marx, profit is surplus value that's added on to the cost of labor and it just goes straight to the capitalist. They don't understand that the capitalist produces things cheaper than the Marxist would, than the central planners would. We don't have time to go into all the reasons,
right.
We respond to incentives and all that.
No, I'm with you. It is David Limbaugh. The name of the book is Guilty by Reason of Insanity. Go and get it right now. It's going to be a great read. He's a great conservative mind and a great lawyer and author. So you brought up 18 different things that I wanted to jump on. Let me jump on the divide and conquer mentality. Obama proved one thing for 8 years. You can divide and conquer very successfully, and you can make it stick. He actually made black people much worse off in this country than they'd been before. In fact, this president has risen black employment, lowered black unemployment, has really brought manufacturing back 500,000, 600,000 jobs, 6 million jobs in total, while Obama was killing the economy on purpose. You kill the economy to make people reliant on you and central government. This economy is less reliant on central government, more reliant on us going and getting it. When it comes to wealth, Elizabeth Warren is rich. She's in the top 1% by a lot. She makes $900,000 a year. She's double into the top 1%, though she's yelling at Bill Gates because he's whining about paying too much in taxes. So what is the game there? Make those who don't have it hate those who do have it instead of incentivizing them that they can go and get it too. David, you and I both know that wealth is not a zero-sum game. It's not like there's a certain amount. Because Rush makes more money than I do doesn't mean I can't go out and be a successful talk show host. That's stupid. But they're making it work.
So true. I didn't close the circle last time. They do not. They get people. They polarize people because and exploit race and gender and all that because that gets them votes. That's why they do it. And they can't all believe that we're racist. They can't be rational and believe they're racist. But you're right. The minorities vote against their own economic interests, also against their social interests. You look at black homes, they're socially conservative, and yet they keep voting. But why? Because they've
been told. And so are Hispanic homes, by the way.
Hispanic, too. They've been told that we hate them, and so they're going to vote against their own interests.
Why believe it and not find out? David, if we talk to each other, that's the problem. The left is afraid that we'll talk to each other. If Hispanics and blacks and whites and Asians and American Indians all talk to each other, we'll find out we kind of like each other. That's the game, right? We have to keep us apart.
Get rid of race consciousness. The left wants to promote race consciousness. We want to preserve Martin Luther King's legacy of racial colorblindness, judge each other on the content of our character, not the color of our skin. They are now wanting to segregate us. They want us to look at each other's external qualities, not as individuals made in God's image, entitled to equal dignity. That's what we believe. And so they continue to polarize us against each other, and they also preach permanent malaise. You mentioned Obama and the economy, depressing the economy, the finite pie. His economic forecasters, Larry Summers and others, predicted we'd never get above 1.5 to 2% growth.
Trump actually said get used to it. They said get used to it. This is the new norm.
Yes, and so the whole thing is it's discouraging that they've got this attitude. But we have to. Part of the purpose of this book is to help educate, help arm our side intellectually, so we can go out and proselytize, evangelize in a secular sense our ideas, because I don't think the left has had to explain their ideas. They haven't had to stand up to them. They've always got us on the defensive. We need to show the moral superiority of capitalism, the moral horror of abortion, the utter insanity of open borders immigration, the insanity of the gender ideology, which says our gender and sex is not determined by our biological attributes at birth or our DNA encoding, but how we choose to identify our sex. You can't convince me, Joe, that 20% of even the rank and file Democrats believe that nonsense, but they're scared to death with the oppression of PC bullying, not to say that A is B and B is A.
I want you to get this book, Guilty by Reason of Insanity. I now agree with you. They are insane. Guilty by Reason of Insanity. His name is David Limbaugh. Go and get this book right now. David, is it available everywhere? Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all that stuff?
Yes, sir. Everywhere.
Okay. No. Go there and get where you normally get it. I'll get some links and I'll put it up. Last quick question. I've got maybe a minute and a half, and this is going to be a compound question, so you might not be able to do it in a minute and a half. But you brought up a couple of things. I never thought I'd see the time where liberals, the far left, would be at odds with feminists. They are.
Yeah,
I never thought that I would see the time when Jews, who historically, for some reason, vote liberal, vote Democrat, are now at odds with the far left wing of this party, as you get the squad is very anti-Semitic. Will that be the end of this liberal push? Because feminists aren't going to back down, and I don't think Jews are going to back down. Suddenly, you've got enemies that you thought were your friends. That's interesting.
It is interesting, but I think they are going to stay with them until we continue to work on them. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's why the left sides with Islam over Christianity. They hate Christians. So even though Muslims are more anti-gay, and we're not anti-gay as Christians, they prefer Islam Islamic terrorism to us. Now, that's an exaggeration, but you get the point. They are crowding out feminists. The transgender movement is now crowding out feminists by saying they go into their bathrooms, they go into their sporting events, biological males enter their bathrooms, enter their workspaces, enter their sporting events and beat them unfairly. Also, they're not allowed to object to it or they'll get shouted down.
Right.
Also, the gays used to say, they still say, we're born that way. Gender ideology, the trans movement says, no, gender is fluid. We can go back and forth on a dime. How does that make sense?
It doesn't.
They're getting crowded out in the activism. Poor gays, they got same-sex marriage, but now they're just second rate when it comes to activism.
It's popular, by the way, to be an anti-Semite if you're on the far left and if you're a socialist in this country.
Squad
is anti-Semitic, but Jews keep on voting liberal. Help me understand.
The left eats each other, eats its own. That's what I meant by that. But anti-Semitism, I forgot to get to that. Here's my theory on that. Jews are white, and under intersectionality, white privilege, white people are the least oppressed, therefore they're entitled to the least protection today. There was always privilege. But this is a more important thing. Capitalism is evil. Jews have always been associated with capitalism, therefore Jews are. Now, this is very soundbite, but it's true. Look at what Ilhan Omar says about the Benjamin's baby, or maybe it's Tlaib. This is serious.
Well, Omar said that, yeah.
Think of the Benjamin. You know, they're doing it today. There's serious anti-Semitism. It's coming from the left. It was in the Women's March. It's all over the place. And yet Jews still vote for the left.
That's got to stop. That's got to stop, because this president has been more friendly to Israel and the Jews than any president in history. They all promised they'd move the capital or the embassy to Jerusalem and call it the capital. He actually did it. Something's got to change. Hey, David, I can talk to you for 2 hours. Go ahead, give me one last point. Go ahead.
Well, in fact, that's what Nikki Haley was talking about. Tillerson and Kelly, they objected to Trump moving the embassy. This is how Trump's so common sense above these bureaucrats, above these entrenched deep staters. It is a refreshing thing. Yeah. I'm really happy what he's doing.
It is David Limbaugh, Guilty by Reason of Insanity. Get that book right now. David, we appreciate the time. We're back after this with your phone calls at 1-800-501-7080. Keep it right here. Joe Pags, thanks a lot for stopping by. Make sure you stick around for Clint Demarest, retired Navy SEAL. Written a book, and I think it's called The Right Kind of Crazy. Very interesting conversation, interesting stories for sure. 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. It's Mike in Illinois. Mike, what's going on? Hi.
I'd like to say something about this Horowitz guy. Everybody says that he is just a man of integrity, unbiased, he's just as great as can be. And
we're
I
talking about the IG, that, right? The Inspector General?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
And I heard that about Comey when Trump was first elected, how great Comey and honesty was. And then I heard it about Mueller when he started his thing and dragged it out 2 years. So my question is Horowitz going to sit here and drag this report out until Trump is impeached? Or if he comes out with it, will it have so much publicity that it'll drown out and end the impeachment process?
Well, it won't have publicity like you're suggesting, because the left won't like it, and the left will bury it the best they can. That's what they do. I would rather he waits, and there's a simple reason why, Mike. If he waits and we get closer to the election, we can expose the Democrats and the left and the coup attempt for exactly what it was right before a Democrat takes on this president that we know is doing such a great job. I don't want it out now. It'll go away in a year.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I've got a question. I grew up on the south side of Chicago in the Democratic Party. I'm a very extreme conservative, and what I'm watching is Obama learned from old Mayor Daley's party in Chicago, and he just made a blueprint of it in our federal government, which people are following now, and you just get these people owing their votes to you, and it perpetuates itself. Anyhow,
that's the plan. Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Mike. I think very well said. I've only got about a minute. Mike in Reno, talk to me. Let's go.
No, you don't give me enough time. All you do is interviews. You don't want to take phone calls.
I took phone calls the entire first hour. Okay. I didn't do one interview the entire first hour.
I didn't listen then. All right.
Well, then you should listen then. Get off the phone. I mean, it's that simple, right? I mean, you get 3 hours. The entire first hour was nothing but me talking and phone calls. And then Mike wants to get mad because I didn't give him enough time. Well, I got to let him go. I mean, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, totally makes sense.
I mean, we love Mike in Reno. I think he was probably going to yell at me or something. But when you call the show and you want to disagree with the host, the worst thing to do when they say, you got about a minute, make it happen, is complain about you not having enough time. It kind of defeats the purpose. I'm just going to put it out there. All right. 1-800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. Clint Emerson, when we come back, he's a retired Navy SEAL, SEAL Team 6. We talked to him about that experience, his latest book, and it's a very intriguing conversation. You're going to like this. Stick around.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.
Great radio stations across the land, JoePags.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, all right there. Also, the live video feed, it is The Weekend with Joe Pags. Glad to have you along for the ride, 1-800-501-7080. Really glad to have you along for the ride. Really glad to have this man on. He's a retired Navy SEAL, and retired is the proper terminology. He sort of explains that to me right off the front. He's got a new book out called The Right Kind of Crazy. His name is Clint Emerson. Clint, I really appreciate having you on. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How do I title you? Do I give you a Navy title or do I just say Clint Emerson?
You can just say Clint Emerson, you know. The okay. Proper, just to distinguish the difference, anybody who's done 20 years or more, they get the title retired.
Okay.
Anybody who's 20 years or less is former.
Okay. So you are retired then?
I am a retired guy. I did 20 plus years.
And I appreciate that service, my man. Thank you for that. When I see SEAL Team 6, of course, I think got Bin Laden. Were you part of that?
I was not part of that.
Okay. but we hear SEAL Team 6, and you guys are the elite of the elite, right?
That command certainly brings in tip of the spear guys, seasoned combat guys, and it's a great place to work.
The name of the book is The Right Kind of Crazy. I want you to go and get it. I saw an interview with you, and I was stunned by a number that you gave. When you joined the SEAL program, there were 120 guys, and what, 28 made it out?
Yeah, a little more than that. It was a summer class. We had roughly 180 guys and 28 originals. Yeah.
So when you go there, what's the expectation, and how much harder was it than you thought it was going to be?
Worse in my head, you know.
Okay.
It's like the anticipation of death is worse than death itself, you know.
Right, right.
And then once I was there, it was really just taking it, you know, one evolution at a time and not, you know, not concentrating on the finish line too much because that can be a little overwhelming.
And how does the weeding out process go? How long does it take before the first few start dropping out?
Oh, they're dropping out before you even class up. Like if you show up to SEAL training, let's say a month early, then the hammer starts dropping on you the minute you show up. And so a lot of people will quit before they even have a chance to class up.
That's amazing. So the 28 make it out, and then you guys, how long is the program, and how ready are you when you're done?
So SEAL training in itself is, which is BUDS, that's 6 months. And then when you're done with that, you have an additional 6 months of, advanced training. But really what that boils down to is really teaching you something, the basics. But you're under scrutiny of your peers and your leadership, for quite some time until you are considered a SEAL.
Okay. It's retired Navy SEAL, SEAL Team 6, Clint Emerson. His new book is called The Right Kind of Crazy. I want you to go and get this. I also saw you make mention of the fact that when you're in, you're the hero. When you get out, here's your blue card. Have a nice day. How abrupt? Is it really that abrupt?
It can be for some guys, and I call it the hero to zero type syndrome, where you're used to being part of this something that's bigger than you and greater than you, and you're doing all these cool things around the globe. I mean, it's really like rock star lifestyle without the money, right?
Right, that's right.
And then all of a sudden, one day your time is up, and you turn in your active duty card for a blue, flimsy little retired card, and then they're like, okay, see you later. And so now you're not part of anything big anymore that's bigger than you, and you get addicted to that, right? And so now you're kind of on your own, and you got to figure it out.
And you go back to the neighborhood and say, hi, I'm here. And it's not like a guy like you doesn't walk around saying, hey, look what I accomplished. A guy like you walks around and says, you should know what I accomplished because I worked my ass off for it. And that's what you got when you were in the Navy. Back in the neighborhood, they were like, oh, look, it's Clint. So what do you do?
Well, you're right. When you're in the Navy, when you're in that community or any special operations, you are the silent professional, right?
Right.
But once you get out, now I'm writing books and I've got a business and I'm doing whatever I want at this point. So, for some guys that transition is an unknown. For me, I had a 2 or 3 year head start. I knew what I wanted to do. I had a plan. And then as soon as I got out, I executed on it. And you figure it out day by day and you try to keep yourself busy.
His name is Clint Emerson, Emerson. Go and get his book. It's called The Right Kind of Crazy. You say in this book that you are really, really good at the job, but you weren't a really good guy necessarily. What does that mean?
Yeah. So really there's many themes in this book. One is to humanize a little bit of the superhero kind of stereotype that we have.
Yeah.
And show people that, hey, you can be a 150-pound little kid like me, join the Navy and make it through some of the hardest stuff if you've got passion. And then when you're in, and if you're like me and you have a appetite for risk, a risky profession sometimes bleeds into your personal life. And that's where the description on the book is basically like, hey, you might be a good soldier, but you may not be the best guy at home. And for me, that was true. You know, I talk about adultery. I talk about all my mistakes. You know, they say bad decisions make great stories. And this book is full of bad decisions.
Well, Clint, I hear you. And we've all made them. I'm glad that you're owning up to it. And I can't wait to read the book. But I guess the question has to become, you kind of have to be kind of a bad guy to do what you do, right? I mean, when you're doing that, you know you're taking lives, possibly. You know that you're abrupting, you know, what's happening in whatever area it is that you're going and doing the operation. If you're a really good, wholesome guy, you might have to think twice before you do it, no?
No, you're right. It takes a certain mentality, and that's why I titled it The Right Kind of Crazy. You know, you've got a bunch of guys that enjoy getting in firefights, blowing things up, jumping out of airplanes, so... There's a certain breed or a certain kind of guy, and they come in all shapes and sizes. So it's really, if you just got the desire, the passion, then you'll go in and you'll start doing great things to bad people.
and again, we appreciate all the work too. It's retired Navy SEAL Clint Emerson. The book is called The Right Kind of Crazy. So look back to when you get out. You get out and you've got all these skills, all this training, all these years put in, 20 plus years, and you've done some amazing things, most of which we're never going to be allowed to find out about, which is odd to me. But you've done these amazing things for freedom, liberty, for the Constitution, for this country, and for our allies around the world. What skills do you have? I mean, initially, you probably don't think you have anything that adds to regular civilian life, right? Did you find out over the years that, well, wait a second, I can apply those things?
Oh, yeah. You end up, I mean, if you're, most guys have a pretty good head on their shoulders, and you start realizing very quickly, one, everyone's a leader in the SEAL community. Everyone's getting enough freedom to think outside the box, which gives them that entrepreneurial spirit, right? They know that, hey, if you start something, finish it. So when you start talking about getting tasks organized, leading people, even as simple as standing up in front of congressmen, senators, admirals, generals, and giving them a presentation on the operation you're going to go do, all translates to the outside. And some guys forget that, you know, especially if you've done it like me for 20 years straight, you may not realize the number of skills that you actually have that apply to the outside world. But you just got to take a moment, think about, and really kind of almost step back and simplify. And then all of a sudden you realize, wow, I do have a ton of stuff that I can offer.
It's retired Navy SEAL Clint Emerson. Get his book, The Right Kind of Crazy. A lot of guys, a lot of gals get out and they say, you don't ever really leave behind what it was you were doing. Many of them actually live it. PTSD is a big deal. How do you make that switch? Because you've got a mentality of this is my job. This is what I do. This is how I do it. These are the directives. That's it. You get out and you can't really act the same way, obviously. So how do you make that switch? Because a lot of people are having a hard time doing that.
Right. No, that's a good question. I dedicated a chapter to it about it's called brain tissue. And, you know, I basically lay out all of my issues with it. The reality is when you're going 120 miles an hour for 20 years straight, and then you get out and it comes to a stop, all that baggage that you've compartmentalized basically hits you in the back of the head and you've got to deal with it. So I tell guys all the time, the most important aspect to that is really just talking. You've got to talk it out. Journaling works, you know, it's different for every guy, but they got some great programs that guys can go through for PTSD and TBI so that they can test out different types of therapy and see which one works for them. They've got everything from art therapy to yoga, but really it boils down, if you got anxiety issues, it really boils down to the breathing. If you've got, you know, more of the hypervigilant stuff, you know, that's something that just kind of, you just hope it wears off over time. But every guy deals with something and they all handle it differently. You just got to take the opportunity to really look out for yourself and get the advice from others before you get out.
By the way, Clint is a best-selling author. His book, 100 Deadly Skills, did really, really well. So make sure you go and get this one, The Right Kind of Crazy. Also, you're being inducted into the International Spy Museum. What is that? First of all, where is that, and how great an honor is that? That's cool.
It is kind of cool. It's one of the most trafficked museums in Washington, D.C.
Wow. Right?
So they've got a ton of visitors every year. They just built a new building. They really do a good job preserving all of the artifacts of espionage. And so anybody who, you know, is into that kind of thing should go. And even if you're not, you should go. It's a really cool museum. And for me, it's just an honor to be in there. And I'm not sure, I can't remember how it happened, but it happened.
I'm glad it happened, and I'm sure it's well-deserved. Retired Navy SEAL is Clint Emerson. His book is called The Right Kind of Crazy. One last question, and I appreciate the access. Hopefully we can do it again soon. The question is, you could have written a book about being a hero and doing this job and rah-rah, everything positive, everything, you know, above board. You made the decision to be raw about it, be real about it, and show the negatives of your own self as well as showing the positives. Why? You could have gone the other way, and everybody would have read it, and they would have been fine. Is it something that you think it gives people a different perspective than they've ever gotten before? Is it self-therapeutic? Is it both of those things?
Yeah, it was a little bit. This was a 3-year project, and it definitely had some therapy qualities to it. You know,
good,
when you
good.
Literally become an open book.
Yeah.
But I knew that there's a lot of books out there that follow the myth, right? They for lack of better words, drink their own Kool-Aid. And
right.
I'm just not that type of guy. So I just wanted to lay it out there that, hey, we're average guys doing unaverage stuff. But anybody who's got that little bit of passion can do what we did for sure.
Retired Navy SEAL Clint Emerson, get his new book, The Right Kind of Crazy. Clint, can we do it again?
Heck yeah. Hit me up anytime.
I will do that. We're back after this in the Joe Pag Show and The Weeknd. Stay right here. Great to have you The Weeknd with Joe Pags, 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080, JOEPAGS.com if you want to opine via Twitter or Facebook or Parler or Parlay, however you want to pronounce it. Stop by there. Also, you can see the live video feed or watch the last show that I've done. Either today's show will be on until Monday. After Monday, you'll see Monday's show until Tuesday. It goes like that. The live stream replays the previous show if you've missed any part of it. Go and check it out. For those who are wondering, most of the interviews I do also have a video component where it's not just audio. You also see the person that I'm interviewing. And all of the interviews that I gave you today do, in fact, do that. So you can go check it out over at joepags.com. Let me take a phone call or two, 1-800-501-7080. Paul's in New York. Paul, what's going on? Hello, Paul. You're on the air. What's happening?
Hey, Joe. I wanted to talk to you about this impeachment hearing.
Okay.
PBS up here in where I am in upstate New York, I had to watch it on the World Channel.
Okay.
PBS World Channel. Three different senators on the Republican side, when they went to talk or give their opinion or ask questions, PBS went to break. And they
Are you surprised?
Just infuriated me.
No, why is PBS showing a break anyway? I thought PBS was public broadcasting. They don't have commercials.
They don't. They don't have commercials. I know they did it just because they didn't want anybody hearing what the senators were saying. And it never happened to a Democrat during that whole period, but three times they blotted out the Republicans.
And that's not surprising. I mean, Schiff was actually doing that in real time as the chairman of the hearing as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, we
I think I lost you. No idea what happened there. You still there, Paul?
Just made my blood boil.
No, I'm with you, and my blood has been boiling watching this thing unfold as well. I appreciate you calling in. No, you're right about that. Well, I don't know. I didn't watch the PBS World Channel, but you're right in that Schiff has been shutting people down. He wouldn't let Stefanik, who is a great young representative out of New York, get the rest of Devin Nunes' time. Nunes was done. He said, I'm gonna give my time to the representative from New York, and Adam Schiff wouldn't allow it. Ah, not allowed. You can give it to the council. You can't give it to another. And historically, as I've grown up watching these sort of things on television, historically, when somebody, whether Republican or Democrat, is done and they've got more time left, I'm going to yield the rest of my time to and then fill in the blank person who's on their side. There was nothing wrong with saying, yes, she can have the rest of my time. But she did so well on Wednesday that Adam Schiff has been shutting her down and other Republicans down as well when they question these people who are coming in. It's all very interesting to me. We lost him. We had somebody call and say they remember he's a TV news anchor in New York. Yeah, I was in upstate New York at WRGB, the CBS affiliate, from 2002 to 2005. And I really enjoyed my time sitting next to Liz Bishop. I really enjoy that area. And a lot of you listen to The Weeknd on WGY in the Capital Region. So I love that there are still some who remember this far away. It's been almost 15 years, if you can think about it, since I left that area. Let me tell you about what Bill Barr is having to say. The Attorney General is getting to the bottom of what really went down after the election in 2016. And the Twitter sphere is freaking out over it. And I can see why, because it doesn't look good. It's a bad look for the Democrats. I'll give you as much as I can in the time we have remaining. For me, this is exactly what we're talking about when it comes to what really went on after that election. The headline is from the Daily Mail. Fired up AG Bill Barr says the Democrats are using every tool to sabotage President Trump in a scorched earth, no holds barred war of resistance, and slams the left for their constant harassment that is dangerous to America. This is written by Ariel Zilber for DailyMail.com. Attorney General William Barr accuses Democrats of waging a scorched earth, no holds barred war of resistance against President Trump designed to sabotage the functioning of the executive branch. The nation's top prosecutor made the remarks in a speech to conservative lawyers who gathered in Washington, D.C. on Friday for a conference. Quote, in waging a scorched earth, no holds barred war of resistance against this administration, it is the left that is engaged in a systematic shredding of norms and undermining the rule of law, Barr told guests of the Federalist Society convention in the Capitol. Barr, who was named Attorney General by Trump after the resignation of Jeff Sessions last year, accused the resistance of dangerous and incendiary language by questioning the legitimacy of the sitting president. This is a very dangerous and indeed incendiary notion to import into the politics of a Democratic Republic, Barr said. The fact is that, yes, while the president has certainly thrown out the traditional Beltway playbook, he was upfront about what he was going to do, and the people decided that he was going to serve, that he was going to serve as president. Barr said the legislative and judicial branches were in the midst of a year-long campaign to chip away the powers of the executive branch. Quote, I deeply admire the American presidency as a political and constitutional institution, Barr said. Unfortunately, over the past several decades, we've seen a steady encroachment on executive authority by the other branches of government. Barr lamented the avalanche of subpoenas as well as Democratic efforts to derail appointments by the Trump administration. These tactics, according to Barr, have had the effect of incapacitating the executive branch immediately after President Trump won the election. Opponents inaugurated what they call the resistance, and they rallied around an explicit strategy of using every tool to maneuver and sabotage the functioning of the executive branch and his administration, the attorney general said. See, hashtag Barr don't care. He's going to call them out. Heads are going to roll. I think there are going to be charges against these leftists who did the conspiracy, who did the coup attempt, and there should be hell to pay. You can't just do this. That's not okay. We got to run. That's Anna. I'm Joe. Thanks for checking in on The Weekend. See you next week.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.